for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. The statistics are staggering. 49 million Americans, including nearly 17 million children, struggle with hunger. On an average school day in 2009, 19.5 million children ate a free or reduced price school lunch, almost a million more than the year before. And just one in six kids who ate those school lunches also received summer meals. Joining me in the studio to talk about the state of childhood hunger in America and what public-private partnerships are doing to eliminate it, Bill Shore of Share Our Strength. Good morning to you, Bill.
Morning, Diane. Thanks
Good to have me. You here. And from a studio at WGBH in Boston, Margaret McKenna of the Walmart Foundation. Good morning to you, Margaret.
Good morning, Diane.
Glad to have you with us. And we will shortly be taking your questions, comments. You can join us on 800-433-8850. You can send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. You can join us on Facebook or Twitter. But first, joining us from Denver is Colorado Governor Bill Ritter. Thanks so much for joining us, Governor Ritter.
Welcome, Diane. I'm happy to be a part of this, and thank you for doing a show about it.
Thank you. Tell us about Colorado. It's not a state that would normally come to mind as we think of childhood hunger. How many children do you estimate there are hungry in Colorado?
Well, that's a hard number to get at. What we know is that we do have a significant number of kids who qualify for the school programs, the feeding programs, so the lunch program, the breakfast program, the summer nutrition program. And really, I think to your point, what we know is that we grossly under-participate in those programs. So I think it's only 35% of all kids eligible for the free and reduced lunch program participate. Only 8% of all the kids who are eligible for the free and reduced student summer nutrition program participate. And so those are the kinds of numbers that we're not proud of and that we are striving to do something really seriously about.
And I understand you're announcing a brand new initiative this morning. Tell us about it.
Well, we have some really serious partners to thank, and Billy Shore is there with you from Share Our Strength. He's been one of the partners. Our school board, the state school board, and our school commissioner, education commissioner Dwight Jones, another partner, my lieutenant governor, Barbara O'Brien, the Denver Foundation, which is a donor-led foundation here in Denver. All of them are partners, and so our program is to end childhood hunger in the state by 2015 and do it through participation, full participation in a variety of things, including the summer nutrition program, the school lunch program, the school breakfast program.
What I don't understand is that the Department of Agriculture tells us that only one in seven schools that offer school lunches also offer school breakfast. If you're going to be without lunch, you might also quite readily be without breakfast.
Right, and I think that's one of the things that we're doing. The big project we're announcing is Hunger Free Colorado, and those partners that I announced are all partners in our what we call our Hunger Free Colorado project. So we agree with you, and actually what's interesting, we think that a school breakfast is one of the most important meals of the day. Interestingly, in this country, we have a childhood obesity problem, Diane, and it may be counterintuitive, but childhood obesity is actually linked to the lack of nutritious meals. because kids then, if they don't eat a good breakfast, their first, you know, food of the day, their first intake of the day is something that's bad for them, a Coke and a candy bar at 10:30 in the morning. And that's not nutritious. That's not healthy. And you wind up having kids with obesity problems because they're not having enough of the right kind of diet early enough in the day at a school breakfast or in the middle of the day as well at a school lunch program. Share Our Strength should be commended for their work in bringing this to the attention of governors. They came to me with it. It took me about a nanosecond to decide this is something we needed to do, and we very quickly put together our program.
And tell me, finally, what about the help that you are or are not getting from the federal government? State governments are being cut back on the funds they're receiving from the federal government. So what do you need from the federal government that you're not getting?
I think the fairest thing to say is we would appreciate if the federal funds to get food to kids would just eliminate some of the bureaucratic hurdles that I think states experience with these federal programs.
Like what?
Well, the processes are just not streamlined. It's just fairly, and I think Secretary Vilsack's very committed to try and get this done. But, you know, if you say, listen, we want to up the ante on federal funding for lunch and breakfast or some nutrition programs, and we want to do it, you know, in this fashion, you have to, there's a lot of work at the federal level to try and get that done. And so I'll just tell you that Secretary Vilsack came to the National Governors Association. He's the Secretary of Agriculture. That's where the food stamp and many of the food programs are. And he is really committed to making sure that they operate in a partnership. But that's the biggest thing, because we're not spending any additional state tax dollars. They're federal dollars. I'm mindful that those are still tax dollars, but they're available for states. The programs already exist. And what we need to do is work really hard to get those kids who are eligible into the place where they can get a breakfast, a lunch, or in the summertime, particularly when kids really have some very serious nutrition issues, to improve their nutrition situation.
Colorado Governor Bill Ritter, he joined us from Denver. Thank you so much for being with us, sir, and good luck on the new program.
Thank you, Diane. I appreciate it, and thank you, Billy Shore.
Thanks, Governor.
All right, and now turning to you, Bill Shore, expand this from Colorado to across the nation. How many kids are hungry?
Well, we've got 17 million kids in this country who struggle, or in families that struggle with hunger at some time of the month. We actually have 40 million Americans now on the food stamp programs, now known as SNAP, but it's a record level. Never in the history of the country have we had 40 million Americans, and one in four of them are children. But as Governor Ritter described, and as I think your questions implied, the programs are in place to do something about this. These dollars are already authorized and appropriated. And so when we went and met with Governor Ritter, we talked to him about the fact that Colorado not only had low participation rates in programs like school breakfast and summer feeding, but as a result was leaving at least $70 million on the table in Washington that were theirs for the asking. And Governor Ritter really responded as quickly as he said. He asked his whole team and his cabinet and his staff to cut through this red tape and get these programs set up, and that started to happen. And so now literally thousands of kids have been added just in the last couple months in Colorado.
And turning to you, Margaret McKenna, tell us how Walmart and the Walmart Foundation are getting involved in this whole situation.
Well, Diane, Walmart is the largest grocer in the United States. And, you know, as the economic turndown has occurred in the last couple of years, we have greatly accelerated our attention to hunger. So we announced a $2 billion hunger campaign, anti-hunger campaign, and both in terms of we're the largest donor of food in the United States today. And we have also announced a $250 million in grants, including to Share Our Strength. Over $10 million of that this year alone will go to kids programs, summer feeding, breakfast programs. And our hope is that we will bring awareness, attention, education, and also supplement these summer programs in particular with healthy, fresh foods. And so through the Boys and Girls Clubs and Summer
issue,
Rec programs.
Isn't it that there are fresh foods out there? They're more expensive than going to McDonald's and picking up a donut or a chicken McNugget or something like that, Bill.
Yes, and families have to know how to prepare those foods, how to shop for them, and how to prepare them. One of the programs that we've had at Share Our Strength, and Governor Ritter was talking about obesity, is a nutrition education program, which is designed to deal with both hunger and obesity and nutrition issues. In fact, Margaret was talking about their commitment. $1.5 million of Walmart's commitment has come to Share Our Strength, just announced this week, to support the expansion of nutrition education. And what we do is we actually take chefs and restaurateurs, many of whom you would know, and ask them to leave their fancy kitchens, go into community centers, work with low-income families on how to do food budgeting, grocery shopping, something as simple as if you know how to carve up a chicken, you could buy a chicken whole instead of buying chicken parts. Save a couple dollars if you're on a limited budget.
How did we get into this situation, Bill? You know, this is the wealthiest country in the world. These kids should be able to have the basics, and yet it doesn't seem to be available.
No, you're right. Well, the recession, of course, has driven up these numbers. But I would say that of all the suffering and hardship that the recession has caused, and, you know, near 10% unemployment and so forth, the least necessary of that is with kids, because these programs are in place. Jonathan Kozel, who you know, once said that you should pick battles important enough to matter but small enough to win. This is one of those battles. We could end childhood hunger.
Bill Shorey, he's founder and executive director of Share Our Strength. It's a nonprofit organization working to end childhood hunger in the U.S. We'll talk more when we come back. And we're back talking about the problem of childhood hunger in America that unfortunately goes right along with the problem of childhood obesity. The two are absolutely connected because in the lack of availability for good fresh foods, kids turn to cheap things that are available at stores like McDonald's. I'm not knocking McDonald's, but that is not only fast food, it's fat food, and we all know that. Here's an email from Dee, who says, the problem is a lack of a safety net, poor diets, and I dare say bad parenting. No child should go to bed hungry. The school cafeteria system was not designed as a source of a child's main meal. We need to educate parents on health, nutrition, and food budgeting. Margaret McKenna, I presume you would agree with that.
Absolutely. One of the things we're trying to do at Walmart is to educate people and to provide healthy foods at low cost. We need to, you know, rid the country of food deserts and provide fresh food. But, you know, Diane, as Billy mentioned, breakfast, and as you mentioned, breakfast is so important, not just to health and obesity, but to academic achievement for kids. It is directly related. And one of the things we're doing at the Walmart Foundation is providing infrastructure to schools. So if they need a microwave or they need a refrigerator to get these programs started, and we're also working with a variety of organizations, FRAC and the National Education Associations, to work out the logistics of in-classroom breakfast, because it will make a difference to the future of our children's education, not just health.
Now, Bill Shore, listen to this email from Keith in Gainesville, Florida, who says, "We are a married nuclear family of four with a single income, no insurance benefits, no, and within the federal poverty guidelines, yet we make just barely too much to qualify even for milk money. Please address the issue of how to get help to those living in the space between abject poverty and self-sustainability who are unable to meet basic needs."
Well, that's a great question, and that, I think, points the finger to where a lot of Americans are today, particularly a lot of Americans who have recently lost jobs, don't have any experience navigating the system, aren't signed up for any of these programs. That's why you see record levels of increases of participation at food banks and things like that. But most families who are in a situation like Keith's would have the opportunity to at least get their kids into school breakfast and in school lunch, even if they don't qualify for other types of assistance. So one of the goals, and the child nutrition reauthorization legislation that's before Congress now, is designed to figure out how do you eliminate barriers to families like Keith's accessing these programs.
Now, I'm looking at a chart, and it says that Florida is one of the states with the highest rates of child food insecurity for children under the age of 18, and Florida is also a state with one of the highest increases in the rates of child food insecurity just since last year, Bill.
Yes, there have been enormous increases over the last 12 months, and that's reflected in all of the statistics. I think it underscores, and I'm glad that Margaret's on this show, but I think it underscores why public-private partnerships can play such a big role here. You know, when you think about all of the problems we're trying to solve in this country,
right,
from Afghanistan to
right,
AIDS, here's a problem that actually everybody can play some role in. And so you have the leadership of companies like Walmart, but also companies like ConAgra and Weight Watchers and Ocean Spray.
Yeah.
We've just seen this enormous increase in corporate participation because, you know, they make their livelihoods from food, they make their livelihoods from eating, and they want to see a way to make a difference. And
but
they've gotten
involved
in this fight. Tell
me how the monies from all these corporations are distributed state by state.
Sure. Well, some of it goes to grants for emergency food assistance. There are always going to be people who fall between the cracks of these programs. So food banks, children's hospitals that deal with malnutrition. Share Our Strength makes grants to more than 250 organizations across the country that do that. But our other focus is, can we really leverage these big systems that exist when you've got only 16% of the kids nationally participating in summer feeding? That means that 84% of the kids who get a school lunch because they're poor and low income are not getting fed during the summer. So to leverage big system change, we do a lot of community organizing with those dollars.
Margaret?
Yeah, and I would add, Diane, it's we've challenged corporations all over America to join us as a coalition to fight hunger. And it's people like not just ConAgra and food, but it's Bank of America and UPS and FedEx. And people are responding. And they're doing Walmart alone has given over 140 refrigerated trucks just to increase the ability of food banks to provide healthy, fresh food, to be able to pick it up and deliver it. So and a lot of companies are reaching out to increase access, information and access to the federal programs, which we really need help doing to help localities do that. So there is a lot of effort, and we're trying to coordinate better.
And one more email, this one from Peter in Tarrytown, New York. He says, doesn't it seem bizarre that so many of our children are not getting enough to eat at the same time we're having an epidemic of childhood obesity? We're the only country in the world whose poor are fat.
Well, hunger and obesity are different sides of the same coin. And they have to do with families with very low income and a lot of economic constraints and a lot of other problems, usually in terms of health and education and so forth, basically deciding to buy the least expensive food, which is almost always the high calorie food that is not necessarily good for their kids but keeps them filled up. That's why nutrition education plays such a critical role here.
And if I can, Diane, Margaret, here's an email for you.
Okay.
It's from Charlie, who's in Middletown, New York, who says, if Walmart wants to eliminate child hunger, perhaps they could pay a living wage to their lowest paid workers.
Well, Walmart's wages and benefits are at least as good or better than any of the other box stores, big box stores. And I think one of the things we're committed to is giving opportunity to people in this economy to have jobs and jobs that have futures in them. 70% of our managers come from people who started as hourly employees. So, you know, it's not a job for everybody, but it is a job for people who need them, and there's a lot of future in those jobs. And I would also say, you know, Walmart really provides a service in terms of the kinds of things we've been talking about, which is in the poorest neighborhoods are the highest prices often and the least access to healthy food. And Walmart is one of those places where provides to people, you know, healthy, low-cost food. And that is a significant contribution, I think.
And joining us now by phone is Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas. Good morning, Senator. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Good morning, Diane. I'm delighted to be with you all and certainly to be talking about an issue that we have first and foremost before us, something that we can do something about.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about the status of the bill to reauthorize child nutrition?
How do I talk about what?
Can you talk about the status of that bill? Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's something I'm pushing pretty hard right now. We've worked hard in the Agriculture Committee when I took over the chairmanship last September. We knew we only had a couple of weeks to reauthorize the child nutrition bill. And so we actually gave ourselves a year's extension. And with that extension, we're able to capture some savings, which we reinvested into the program. And we're able to expand some of the automatic enrollment as well as some grant money available to school districts, particularly for new equipment, because we talk about nutritious foods, but we don't have equipment. Some of these schools have 40- and 50-year-old equipment. And then this spring, we were able to produce a bipartisan bill unanimously out of the Ag Committee with the largest increase in the history of the program, and it was paid for. And so we've got an excellent bill. The Senate has the opportunity to pass a bill that will revolutionize our federal child nutrition programs and put us on the path to ending childhood hunger and to do so in a way, with all respect, to also lowering childhood obesity. And so for the sake of our children and the health of this nation, we can't miss this opportunity. And so I've been a pest, pestering the majority leader and others, to bring this bill up. We've got a great opportunity.
And I understand the current act expires September 30, so you've got to get this moving. There has been some resistance from school boards around the country on this issue of establishing national nutrition standards to try to deal with, as you said, the twin problems of obesity and hunger.
That's correct. But by and large, most people have really been great and supportive. I know there are some out there that are frustrated or perhaps concerned about what that might mean. But giving USDA the authority to set standards in tandem with the OIM, the Office of or the Institute of Medicine, it's the IOM, I'm sorry, the Institute of Medicine, which is you know, going to provide us for the first time some standards that will be remarkably different and better for our children. We've worked with a lot of the manufacturers, and we've brought everybody into play. A bill that I think is, as I said, we've brought Democrats and Republicans together. We've brought hunger advocates on ending hunger together with manufacturers and others, the beverage industry, the food industry, and others, to really realize that this is a problem that exists and that everybody can be a part of this solution.
Now, we've had an email from Amanda in Grand Rapids, Michigan, who says, until the federal guidelines for children's nutrition are fixed, breakfast lunch programs through the school, they're going to be more detrimental than anything else. Obesity starts in lack of education and availability of only processed foods, which is all you get in schools, along with high-fat sugar foods.
Well, we're changing all of that. And if you've noticed in the last Farm Bill, we opened up the fresh fruit and vegetable program to all 50 states, not just a few states in that program. We're also opening up the gardening programs. The First Lady has been wonderful in advocating for our school garden programs, where students can learn how to grow foods and better understand and educate themselves and their friends on campus how important fresh fruits and vegetables are in our diet. We've also got the Farm to School program, which I spoke to a group at Heifer International in Little Rock the other day, talking about how critical that farm-to-school program is in encouraging and engaging our local producers in being able to supply fresh fruits and vegetables to our local schools, making sure that we don't stop with our schools, but encouraging our local growers to engage with local nursing homes,
all
right, hospitals, and restaurants, and others. So we are working desperately to try and change both those standards, which we will do with USDA and the Institute of Medicine, as well as integrating programs like our Fresh Fruits and Vegetables program and our Farm to School programs and others, which will help us change that.
All right. And some critics have said that this legislation is simply too expensive. How do you respond?
We've paid for it, and we've paid for it out of accounts that make sense. You know, we're certainly open to figuring that out, but, you know, we're increasing this program and the funding for child nutrition by $4.5 billion. The president had asked for $10 billion, and many of us felt like we were going to work as hard as we could to get to that goal. And at $4.5 billion, and I'm certainly open to looking at more opportunities, but I think it is an important factor that we've got a bipartisan, unanimous bill that's paid for, and it is the largest increase in the history of the program.
Now,
not to mention the fact, though, that we have not seen an increase in the federal reimbursement for school feeding programs since 1973.
Now, isn't it true that only the Senate bill is paid for and the House has not yet figured out how to fully pay for their bill?
That's true. The House bill is not paid for. It's at about $8 billion, and it is unpaid for. But if there's anything, we know we can find common ground, and that is a level at which we can accept and certainly paying for it. I think that there's enough members in the House that are going to want to pay for it so that we'll be able to get over that hurdle.
And do you believe that the president will support this legislation?
Do I believe who?
The president will support the legislation.
Yes, ma'am, I do. I just don't see how anybody could not. I mean, we have moved so far this ball down the field in terms of both increases in funding, in standards, in our outreach, in new programs, in working with food service folks among our schools, expanding programs. You know, this bill, too many children are eligible for programs like free school lunch, but don't participate in one of the biggest barriers. And I'm one of the very few senators with school-age children. who are in public schools. I know what the paperwork's like because it comes home in the backpack every year. And our bill includes a provision to eliminate that paperwork burden. It's going to, in turn, enroll 100,000 additional children per year into free school meals. And, of course, we know hunger doesn't stop when the school bell rings.
You know, if you can briefly describe for us, what does that paperwork involve?
It's huge. It's tons of paperwork. It's filling out a tremendous amount of detail and other things that, you know, quite frankly, most of the people who are going to be eligible have already filled out, whether they're on the WIC program or whether they're on SNAP program. They may be in other low-income housing programs. I mean, if they already qualify for these other things, their children already qualify for free or reduced lunch.
Senator Blanche Lincoln of Arkansas, I want to thank you so much for joining us this morning. Good luck to
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely. Well, we're passionate about it. We're going to make it happen. Thanks, Diane.
Thanks for being with us. And when we come back, we're going to open the phones for your questions, comments for Bill Shore of Share Our Strength and Margaret McKenna, president of the Walmart Foundation. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Wallace Foundation, a source of ideas for expanding learning opportunities beyond the school day, at wallacefoundation.org. By the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting efforts to find and fight the causes of homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org. And by the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, actor Robert Duvall talks about his film career and why he likes to do things himself on camera.
I danced a two-step, and I like to do my own dancing, my own horsemanship, and my own singing if in a movie.
Robert Duvall has a new film called Get Low. Join us.
And we're back with our two guests, Bill Shore. He's founder and executive director of Share Our Strength. That's a nonprofit organization working to end childhood hunger in the U.S. Joining us from WGBH in Boston, one of our stellar stations, Margaret McKenna. She's president of the Walmart Foundation. She formerly served as president of Lesley University and as deputy counsel in the Clinton White House. Let's go first to Waterford, Michigan. Good morning to you, Tony. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Diane.
Morning, sir.
Long-time fan here.
I'm glad. Thanks.
Just wanted to, when you started the show, I heard the talking point that said, how ironic it is that at the same time in this country we have an epidemic of childhood hunger, we also have an epidemic of childhood obesity. And I just wanted to make the observation. I know it's been made several times through emails during your show, but I think that the root cause of both of those symptoms that we have is the attitude of people in Congress, some people in Congress, that it's okay to emphasize profits at the expense of kids.
Is that it, Tony?
Well, on the one hand, emphasizing profits because profits at the expense of good nutrition. In other words, nutrition could be a lot better if the food companies emphasized good products that were healthy instead of the junk food that they're pushing so strongly.
Bill, sure.
Well, I think it's a great point. I think many companies now are coming around to that point of view, and they're starting both to diversify their offerings and to engage more in types of nutrition education. So there's a lot of things that come into play here. There's the role of the business community. There's the role of parents. There's the role of government. And all of us have to kind of pull together in the same direction if we're going to get kids what they need.
Now, here's another perspective from a caller who says there's no requirement on the recipient's part to do anything for the food and assistance they're receiving. This leads to an attitude of entitlement and laziness and an unhealthy dependence on the government and others for one's subsistence, all very damaging to the individual and the nation as a whole.
Yeah, except for the fact that we're talking about children here, right? We're talking about, you know, one in four children on the in the country being on food stamps. And their obligation is to be healthy and to go to school and to get an education and be part of our future.
All right. To George in Manchester, New Hampshire, good morning to you.
Good morning, Diane.
Hi,
my job, specifically on days like this, is taking the local and organic produce into restaurants in southern Maine and New Hampshire. The participation of these restaurants in SOS events in South Portland, or I guess that's the southern Maine and New Hampshire, SOS, has raised a great deal of consciousness and funding. What I would like to point out is that the Farm Bill and Congress could do a great deal about enhancing the farm-to-school program, including the idea that in many of our states, the summer growing season coincides with this lack of school nutrition program for a majority of students. So if we were to essentially create a summer CSA and possibly copy the kind of role model that the Bonnie Eagle school system in Maine has done at their middle school, we would teach the children greenhousing and the potential of raising their own food, understanding how food is grown, and that could be tied into their health, biology, and environmental studies programs.
Bill, sure.
Well, just one thing I would add to George's point is that one of the real secret weapons in this effort to improve child nutrition are the chefs and the restaurateurs around this country. The First Lady asked us to bring 700 chefs to the White House lawn in June, which we did, to kick off her Chef's Move to School program. And these chefs were passionate about improving the quality of school breakfast and school lunch, about bringing farm to school as a reality into schools. And I think we're going to see more and more pressure by people who are expert in nutrition and food influencing public policy.
To Central Florida. Good morning, Eddie. You're on the air.
Yeah, Diane, I love your show.
Thanks.
But I'm a little concerned. You know, I'm not against healthy eating or helping people. In fact, I do both. But I'm not sure that the facts support the level of outcry, and certainly I don't think they justify increasing an already out-of-control government deficit and government reliance of lower-income citizens. I mean, you look at some of these studies that are done to support some of this stuff. Like, you know, you hear this 25% of children go to bed hungry statistic, and you wonder where they get that statistic from. I mean, I think we're putting a lot of faith in these studies that we're really not even really considering what they're asking. Because I don't remember what study it was, but I recently someone was where I was looking at a study, and they were, one of the questions that was asked was, in the last year, has your child ever complained of being hungry? And, you know, I don't know if you guys all have kids, but what kid doesn't complain of being hungry?
I understand your point. Margaret, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I've spent my whole life as an educator, and I can tell you that the studies show a significant increase in educational attainment if kids have breakfast. And, you know, talk about cost-benefit ratio, the cost of providing a healthy breakfast in terms of academic achievement, I mean, that is an easy, easy choice. And we should, you know, there are some cities like Newark that are providing universal breakfast to kids because, not just because of health, but because of educational attainment. And Diane, if I could add something else that you talked about a little earlier, is, you know, one of the things that we can do as a retailer is Walmart. We've been trying to work with, we are working with our suppliers because we have to do this together to make our foods healthier. All of us, you know, not individual companies, but all of our suppliers we're talking to. And also to provide education in our retail environments on healthier choices.
All right.
So it's got to take all of us.
And joining us now from Annapolis, Maryland, Governor Martin O'Malley. Thanks for being with us, sir.
Absolutely. It's my honor, Diane. How are you doing?
I'm just fine. Thanks. Tell us what happens in the summer to children who rely on school programs.
Well, typically what had happened is many of those children had no place to turn for a meal, a single meal of the day that they could be assured was a nutritious meal. So one of the big gaps, you know, Maryland has become, I think we were the first state to join with Share Our Strength and Billy Shore's vision to announced that we were going to eradicate childhood hunger in Maryland by 2015. And one of the tactics in that strategy is to greatly increase the summer food service program. And we have increased that from 2007, about a 30% increase in the number of summer meals that we deliver and provide for kids.
But I gather that there are still many low-income children in Maryland who are not receiving summer meals. Why is that?
Well, a lot of it has to do with outreach and organizing and making the parents or grandparents or caregivers of these children aware of the fact that this sort of help is available. I mean, a lot of this, Diane, is not a matter of the It's not a matter of the programs not being in place or the funding not being in place. It's a matter of us organizing and reaching out, doing things like the Summer Meals Hotline, which we created in Maryland, which has received over 800 calls. Sending backpack postcards, advertising the Summer Meals Program to parents before school ended. That went out and reached 400,000 children in 17 counties, and of course targeting where we know that hunger is the greatest challenge. So we know, you know, if you lay out on a map, we know where the children are that are most in danger of facing hunger over the summer and after school, and that's where we need to target our efforts. And if we do a little more every month, every couple of months, we'll be able to look over our shoulders years from now and say that we have been able to address this gap. And I think it's exciting in a time when people are so cynical about what our public institutions and private institutions can achieve together. In Maryland, we believe that we have the opportunity to eradicate childhood hunger, and I think the whole nation does as well.
Governor Martin O'Malley of Maryland, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Diane.
And Bill Shore, are states around the country generally going to be working in the same direction, or is it just some states?
Well, I think states are. Governor O'Malley was actually being a little bit modest because, in addition to being the governor to be the first one to say we want to end childhood hunger in Maryland, he's actually influenced a lot of other governors. Governor Ritter would be the first to say that they decided to do this in Colorado because they saw what Maryland did.
And
we recently met with Governor Beebe in Arkansas, who wants to do something similar in Arkansas. And remember that governors are mostly, in today's economic environment, standing up every day and cutting their budgets.
Exactly.
And shrinking programs that most of them care about. And so to have the opportunity to actually expand programs because these dollars exist on the federal basis is very important.
All right. Let's take a caller in Fairfax, Virginia. Hamid, you're on the air.
Good morning, man.
Yes, go right ahead, sir.
Long-time fan, and I'm just surprised you're one of the only programs that is talking about the real things. But the one thing that I was concerned about is, well, why doesn't anybody talk about the actual quality of food? We have millions of acres of corn that is not good for consumption of human being and produced by companies like Monsanto that are destroying the food. And then we are using that to feed all these feedlots and all the non-quality so-called food. And then we talk about kids being hungry. We have millions of acres that is wasted. And instead of subsidizing these big corporations and big feedlots and all those stuff, why don't we start thinking about subsidizing quality organic or well-produced food with the small companies so we have real food that we can feed everybody?
All right. I'm going to turn to Margaret McKenna.
Well, Walmart is the largest seller of organic food in the country. And, you know, our goal at the company is to provide low-cost, healthy food. And for those who cannot afford it, we're giving away 200 million pounds of food this year. Over 50% of that is protein and fresh vegetables and fruit. So we're very concentrated on providing healthy, accessible food.
Margaret McKenna, she's president of the Walmart Foundation, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Rebecca, who's in South Florida. Good morning, Rebecca.
Good morning. How are you, Diane?
Fine, thanks.
I just wanted to say that I am in Florida, and someone mentioned earlier about the paperwork being really difficult. I lost my job, and I'm on unemployment, and the paperwork was very easy, and my daughter qualified, but because of the quality of the food, I still continue to pack her lunch every day.
Describe the quality of the food, Rebecca.
Well, I think that most schools, I know even from when I was a child, provide institution-like food. The vegetables are overcooked, you know, like the old jokes about the surprise meat. It just seems that, you know, a deeper problem, and I know that's a whole other show, is the food that we're giving our kids. And, excuse me, when you look at something like the supersize me video and they show how when they've substituted fresh organic foods for institutional foods in schools and even prisons, the behavioral and all sorts of differences that it makes. And I think that's more important.
Bill.
Well, it's a great point. I think things are starting to change. There is a movement that where chefs are embracing this idea. Politicians are embracing this idea. Food companies are embracing this idea. There are certainly school breakfast programs that I've seen. You don't have to go very far here in Washington to see them. We're increasing the school lunch or school breakfast program might actually be damaging to kids based on the quality of the food. But I think people are very sensitive to this now, and they're making a major effort to improve that quality, to keep it fresh, to keep it nutritious. 5 years from now, I think it'll be a much different picture.
But how much more is it going to cost?
Well, it is definitely a little bit more expensive.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're talking about a rounding error, you know, relative to what we invest in banks and auto companies when they're in trouble. So we've got kids in this country who are in trouble, 1 in 4 on food stamps, and we're not talking about a lot of money in the scheme of things.
How hard is it to get this message across, Bill, that young children are going hungry in the richest country in the world?
For many years, it was very difficult to get that message across. I would say the recession has frankly changed things. People are reading about food banks and lines at food banks. They're reading about record numbers of Americans needing of assistance. So at Share Our Strength, for example, unlike a lot of nonprofit organizations, our revenues have been up significantly over the last year. And I think people see this as an investment that makes sense to make in their community because they're aware that this problem can be solved.
But at the same time, are there those, like a couple of our callers, who don't believe it's the government's responsibility, that you as a private organization, that Margaret with Walmart, ought to be taking care of this, the government should not?
There are definitely people that believe that, and there are people who just don't even believe that it's an issue.
Exactly.
One of your callers talked about schools. We surveyed 740 public school teachers. 62% of them identified hunger as a problem in educating their kids.
That's so tough. Well, Bill Shore and Margaret McKenna, you're both doing great work. Thank you so much for being here. Bill Shore is founder, executive director of Share Our Strength. Margaret McKenna is president of the Walmart Foundation. Think about this issue, folks. It affects all of us. Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.